Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Claims Never Sleep. I am so happy to introduce my guests today. I have on Erica Hooven. Erica works for JKJ, which is an insurance broker, but she works specifically with high net worth individual clients. So she's coming on to talk about the specific things that she looks for in insurance programs and how she works on her relationships with these clients to match them up with the best coverage possible for them. And also just some of the things that she looks for that are risks and she wants to protect her clients from. And she's just a pleasure to talk to. And I think you'll love her. So with that, I'll bring her in.
This is the Claims Never Sleep podcast, presented by Cruiser Mitchell, with your host, Megan Henry.
Good morning, Erica. Welcome to this episode of The Claims Never Sleep. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Megan. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. And as you're saying, just so for our listeners out there, we are recording this Friday before the holiday weekend. I have a list of a million things I need to do today after we get off this call that does not involve work.
This is true. But you know what? What a better way to go into a holiday weekend, right? I'm excited. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe we've done this before. I don't know. It seems very familiar, very Groundhog Day moment for me.
Maybe once.
Yeah, we may have already recorded this episode. We may have talked through this episode, and being on this new platform, I forgot to press the record button. So Erica, it was so nice to come back and record a part two. So it's going to be even better the second time around. We've rehearsed.
Absolutely. And you know what? Just another excuse to get talking to Megan. I was excited. I was like, sign me up. When can we go?
Yeah. Lesson learned, new platform, new ways of recording things. Now I know the record button is something I need to press in the top upper right-hand corner of my platform.
Everything happens for a reason. They just want us to talk again. It was all
absolutely
good.
Erica, again, you're one of my inaugural guests on Claims Never Sleep. This is a new podcast that I'm launching. So thank you so much for being part of the first group of recording episodes. So I really, really appreciate you coming on twice. But you currently work for JKJ, which is a broker. You're in the insurance world and not necessarily the claims world, but claims adjacent. We talk a lot about claims on this program, but we talk a lot about insurance. We talk a lot about attorneys and defensive cases and all that. But your path to getting where you are, I think, is fascinating and not one I've heard before. Everyone, when they go into law or claims or insurance, I have not had a guest on yet that has said, oh, when I was a little kid, I really wanted to go into insurance when I grew up. No one has that path, but you have an exceptionally, I think, interesting one. So why don't you share a little bit where you got started in your professional world and how it kind of led you to insurance?
Absolutely. Well, it is funny. It's like a running joke in our industry where everyone's like, you always fall into insurance. It's never what, like you said, Megan, you don't wake up at 6 years old. Oh, I can't wait to be in insurance. But yeah, my story is pretty unique. I love to tell it. I went to college in Pennsylvania, Bloomsburg, small school in the middle of nowhere. And I studied marketing and sales. So when I was in school, I was heavily involved in the sales program. So we did a lot of career fairs, a lot of sales competitions and whatnot. And through that journey, I met some amazing folks at Tom James Company. So my first job out of school, I was selling custom clothing to very high net worth individuals. It was a grind up first, but taught me everything that I know now in regards to sales and working hard to get what you want. It was a really unique career. I spent my days going to see high net worth individuals in their home and offices and measuring them, picking out all their suits and ties and customizing the buttonholes of their shirts and helping them dress for Kentucky Derby or a wedding they have coming up. So it was super fun. I had amazing relationships with my clients. As you can imagine, it was a very personal relationship. Got to know them, their families, and their friends, right? They liked what I did. So I had an amazing network there. I think by the end of my 3.5 year career, I had about 250 some clients and amazing coworkers that I worked with. But through the pandemic, there was a lot of people where their mind and their priority and their everyday needs shifted quite heavily. Not as many people were wearing suits, which you'll learn in that industry, even if the world ends, I think people still like to look nice for their own mental sanity. But it was a perfect kind of time in my life where it was a good time to make a change, right? So lucky for me, I had really great connections from what I did. You know, I worked with a lot of attorneys, I worked with financial advisors, business owners in general, in a lot of different industries, insurance brokers, insurance carriers, people like that. So I had a lot of exposure to very high level success. And at the end of the day, I connected with my clients. They were my clients at JKJ. I worked with a lot of partners here. So it was kind of an easy call for me to make when the time came, right? So yeah. I called the partners here and, you know, I said, hey guys, thanks for everything over the last 3 years. I really loved working with you and I hope we can stay in touch. And before I knew it, I was in JKJ's office for an interview and haven't looked back since, but yes. That's how I got into the industry.
I want to back up though for a second, because this is like your first job out of college, right? And it's kind of like a big job. You have to really put on your big girl pants, and you are this young woman and you're showing up at people's homes. How did that feel? Like, how did you fight like the imposter syndrome that I don't belong here? I just imagine it could be intimidating at first, showing up at someone's house that clearly they've hired you to style them pretty much. And you're like, but I'm like a 22-year-old, like, no-eyed, like, gal, you know?
It's true. And I will tell you, like, the training process was very awesome at Tom James, right? Like, we spent a lot of time shadowing our mentors and going on appointments with them. But at the end of the day, someone told me this once, and I'll never forget it. And it's something I remind myself every day. But everyone wakes up the same way, right? Everyone puts their pants on the same. So when you just have that mindset, and I really enjoyed talking to these people and realizing how they got to where they were. So definitely was an adjustment. And I think in this day and age, 2023, a young girl walking into a guy's house or office, there were precautions that you had to take, right? There was a lot of vetting that went on. But yeah, I'd say just remembering that everyone started somewhere and people love to help people. So getting in there, building a relationship with them, getting kind of personal and letting them know your goals, it gets you on the same level.
And I imagine you're almost like a therapist in a way, because I imagine once people start to trust you, they share a lot and you really get to know them, and that helps you do your job better.
Absolutely. And it was a lot of questions, right? I got really good at asking pretty direct questions and personal questions, which again, kind of translate to what I do now. But back then it was, what do you like to do on the weekends? Where do you guys vacation? What type of image do you want to portray when you walk into a room? Because people judge you within the first 30 seconds of meeting. So yeah. It was a lot of just good questions and fun conversations.
Without disclosing any specifics, was there any like any answers that really shocked you that you were like, oh, or people having certain interests that you're like, oh, I didn't see that one coming?
For sure. I mean, that job, I could write a book, honestly. One time I was on an appointment with a mentor of mine, Austin, and he was going to see a client. He came into his house. He's like, oh, I'll be right there. And we're looking around. He's like, that's his car. I wonder where he's at. Flies in on his helicopter. He just has a plane out back. That was crazy. But and even just some of the events, and I think the best part was like, well, what are you going for? Right. And they're like, I want to, you know, I have my Rolex on. Like, I want to be like, you know, very polished when I walk in a room. We would be able to customize suits to the point where, and they still can, but the lining was like their picture. The best is when people like want their picture inside their lining, or they do like a special occasion, say they achieved a big award for work. So it'd be like 2023 President's Club. So I always love doing fun projects like that. And then Kentucky Derby was always a fun time of year. A lot of my clients would go there and we'd have fun outfits.
And don't
break people out of their shell.
I wish you could have like gone along being like, don't you need a stylist for the road? Like,
are you sure you know how to tie your tie? I think you need someone there to help you.
Because you know, they are not on the grass. Like, they are in like the best area and they're making the high bets. Like,
got that right. You got that right. They'll be like, oh, I'm going to Florida for the month. I hear the couple events. I'm like, okay, well, if you need help, I don't know if it's going to be in time. I think I need to deliver it to you. I'll be there.
Hi. So you mentioned, obviously, during the pandemic, this role was one that like kind of slowed down. So you had to pivot, like many, many people had to pivot. And so you pivot to JKJ. I think you had said like some of your clients were at JKJ, and that's kind of how you got your foot in the door. But now what you do is you work with high wealth clients as well. So it was like a perfect segue. Why don't you explain a little bit about that, like what you currently are doing at JKJ and like how this totally intersection of your prior career with your current career?
So this is actually a funny story too. It really speaks to where I'm at and what I specialize in now. But when I was having the conversation, so I when I was selling suits, I would literally come to JKJ and post up for the day. I work with about five of the partners here. And it was just my favorite office, amazing culture, amazing guys with great reputation. So it was an easy decision, but they offered me the job and they said, yeah, Erica, we're going to send you over the job description for private client group. So personal insurance. And I kind of looked at Pat and Doug and I was like, well, are you sure? Like, you guys are in commercial. Like, I kind of want to get into that world. Like, it's, you know, when you're talking insurance and it's like the big shiny prize, right? And they're like, well, Erica, let's think about this. Like, you have such a skill set of working with these high net worth individuals on such a personal level. I didn't realize when I got into this industry how personal insurance can be. And over time, like, I'm just so happy with how I ended in the private client group because now I get to work alongside of the commercial and the benefits team at JKJ and helping their C-suite executives. Oh. So really, it was like, you got to learn insurance, which I can absolutely, you know, I've come very far in the last 3.5 years, but it was the same type of clientele, same type of questions I was asking. So it was really a perfect transition. And like you said, all my clients were high net worth when I was doing the clothes thing. So a lot of my clients then are my clients now. Yeah. So the best thing was I would call my clients when I switched careers and they're like, oh, you mean I'm not going to be spending thousands of dollars with you? You can save me money.
True. That, I guess it's true.
Yeah. It depends on what kind of program you have now, but I will protect you.
But I don't want it to be lost that how much work and studying you had to do to get where you are. Like, this is not, you just don't like step into this role and be like, okay, now I can sell insurance. Like, that's not how it goes. You had a rigorous studying and testing exam process.
Oh, absolutely. And if you talk to the CEO of our company, Bruce White, he just preaches to us every day, you need to become a student of the industry. And you learn pretty quickly once you get in it what that entails. So I got hired in July, first started, and I was licensed by August, which was a pretty fast track. Yeah. I spent the whole month just with my head down in the property and casualty to get my property and casualty license. So that's about a 4 to 5 hour test.
Probably helped it was during COVID though too. You didn't have many distractions at the moment. Well,
not only that, I think it was a time during COVID where people were still figuring things out. I mean, this was very early on in 2020, yeah. And not a lot of people were switching careers the way I did. It actually worked out to my benefit. I was doing courses online, mm-hmm. and you have to sign up for a course, right? And they do a lot of the studying. And usually you go to a facility, it's in a classroom, you're in a classroom with maybe 20 to 50 people. I got one-on-one training.
Awesome.
So COVID was different, and it was different for the whole world, obviously, but there were some pros and cons, but I got to have kind of one-on-one training. I got to take my tests at home, which is different, but that was even crazy. During that time, there were proctors online. So I had to show them my whole apartment, the whole room I was in. They were checking under my desk just so I wasn't cheating. Right?
Oh my God. I wouldn't even think, just didn't occur to me because, you know, like during that time, people were taking the bar exam online too. And yeah.
It's crazy. And you'll see it's still kind of that way now. And even to this day, I do continuing education courses. A lot of our carriers offer great programs to learn about new products or existing products, whatever it is. So I'm constantly keeping up with the industry and keeping up with my courses and credits. So now it is a little more in person, but there's still a lot available, more available online, which is convenient and allows us to kind of participate in more things because you can just have it up on your screen and then go into a meeting right after.
Yeah. Why don't you take me through, like, I hate asking, what do you do in a typical day? Because I know there's no typical day, but say you have a new potential insured or a new potential client. What's your first step of what you approach them with as to find out like what their needs may be as to like their personal lines insurance?
Really good question. And I'll kind of give a shameless plug to our firm at JKJ here.
Right.
So we are privately held insurance brokerage. We're located right in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Now we've been around 60 years. We are very committed to being a privately held firm. And it really allows us to kind of keep that boutique feel with a high level of service for our clients. So in our firm, we do have multiple divisions. So we have a commercial division, we have an employee benefits division, financial services. We have an international program. So there's a lot of kind of different avenues. We're very holistic, right? So a lot of my clients, aside from my prospecting efforts, I'm out all the time networking with attorneys and financial advisors and whatnot. Because of our holistic approach, I get a lot of clients from our commercial and benefits team and our financial services team. So our process is very service oriented. We do a lot of the questioning up front. And what I hear, we ask a lot of questions that maybe other people don't. So we receive a new prospect. I request their declaration pages for their current program up front. And that's your primary home, your auto, your valuables, your excess liability or umbrella policy, if you have any investment homes, secondaries, things like that. I want the whole portfolio. I then do my own analysis of everything you have. I go online, I look at a map, I find everything that's publicly available to do as much homework as I can. And then I have a conversation with the client and we ask a lot about just the details, right? Like we want to know, when was your house built? When was the roof last updated? How old's the electrical system in your house? What's the quality of your kitchen? What's the quality of your bathrooms? Do you guys have marble countertops? What kind of artwork do you have in your home? And then it gets to, you know, do you serve on any boards? We want to make sure, you know, do you own businesses? We want to make sure you're properly insured in terms of liability limits. So we do probably an hour to an hour and a half long conversation with our clients or our prospects before we actually go to market. So once we have all that information, we then approach our markets. We work with about 30 plus carriers where we put a little chart together. We find out who looks the most competitive, what carrier is going to provide exactly what the client needs. And then we make our recommendations from there. I have a nice proposal call with them, answer any questions, maybe make adjustments to the coverage limits based on the client's needs. And then from there, we'll hopefully bind the coverage. And then I have a whole team that I work alongside with our account managers that they're there to help them, you know, get everything to the mortgage companies, everything settled. And then they're the ones that really do a lot of the handholding in terms of if you get a new car, if you have any questions, if you buy a new house. So we really do take like a team approach when working with clients and prospects.
You know, I imagine with these type of clients though, you have, because you mentioned like artwork, like I imagine there's a lot of collection type pieces that are part of the equation. Are there anything that sticks out? Some things that you've seen that are unusual that you're like, oh, wow, okay, I got to dig a little deeper at that. Need to cover this one.
Absolutely. I love that question. And the valuables policies are my favorite ones to review, right? There's so many aspects, right? Like, is it something they got when they were traveling in Milan and they brought home, or is it a family heirloom from their grandparents or something like that? But yeah, we get some crazy, crazy collection schedules from comic books to gun collections to stamp collections, but the artwork and me being me in the industry I came from, I always love looking at the schedule of Birkin bags and the jewelry. And I mean, some things you think you have a goal in life, right? You're like, all right, this is what I want to achieve for myself. And then you realize there's just a whole nother level of individuals out there that have interests and collections that some of their stuff costs more than my net worth, obviously, but like, you know what I mean? You can't even imagine.
Can I just like side shoot here though? Like the Birkin bag, okay? I would be terrified to carry that bag around.
Me too.
Like carrying a bag that costs more than my car. Like I where do you bring it? It's like, obviously I am not going to the places that people bring Birkin bags to, but I just think about like going to the movies. Now I just like, I bring a bag, you just put it on the ground. Like you can't do that. Yeah. I'm just amazed by them. But of course, if you have a $30,000 bag, but it's crazy, right?
Especially in this society. I don't know. You walk around in the center city, Philadelphia, and you're just like, oh, I don't know if I would wear that ring. I'd flip it the other way. But like, they're like, it's another guy. That's why you have insurance though.
Yes, true. And I guess I understand like the watches more. I'm sure you see a lot of watch collections as well.
Watch collections, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
For some reason, watches make more sense to me than the bags, even though like they're beautiful bags. Beautiful. I don't know.
I think they just get to a point. Yeah, I think they get to a point where, you know, they're like, oh, this is cute. I'm like, oh God, okay. Yeah. This is cute. But it's very fun to work with.
My only designer bag I've had since like 2004, and it probably costs like $200.
Michael Kors, bought at the Kate Spade outlet. Yeah, same.
But anyway, there's something to strive for us, right?
Absolutely. That's it. My vision board is way more filled with things that I never even knew existed, if you asked me 5 years ago.
And this is just something I thought of too. Have you, and this might be totally outside of some requests that you get, but have you ever had anyone request about like insuring parts of their body? Like you always hear about like so-and-so's legs are insured. Who's the legs? Is it Beyonce's legs? Or maybe it's Taylor Swift's legs. Someone's legs are insured or whatever. Like, do you ever, or is that totally outside of your?
I will say I have not come across that yet, but like I said, I hope that I get to work with some people where their legs are worth insuring. Yeah, that's a new one. I have not even asked that question.
Well, yes. It's going to come. Yes, 2024 is your year. Someone's going to want, sure, like their arms or
absolutely something. Well, you know, we do have a pretty nice professional sports book at JKJ. We insure the Eagles and Commanders and things like that. So that's where that we do work with some very cool, high affluent individuals. So maybe those guys, they should probably insure their legs or something.
Probably, or their arm or whatever it may be. So I'm glad you mentioned that though, because I'm sure JKJ doing what you do and working with a lot of large companies, I'm sure a lot of your clients are kind of maybe C-suite of those companies coming to you on their own behalf, not just for the company.
Absolutely. That is a huge, huge part of what I do. Yeah. And I think from a liability standpoint, when you own such a large organization or especially some of the companies we work with, they're more public figures. It's very important in this society to make sure that they're insured up to their net worth. All their homes and stuff are insured properly because we do such a good job on the commercial and benefit side. They get to see what we can help them with on their personal side as well.
Are there some common concerns that you hear from your clients about making sure that their insurance is up to snuff or things that they're worried about that they just want to make sure that they're covered for?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like we are in such a hard insurance market right now. People are coming out of the woodworks. Maybe they haven't reevaluated their insurance in the past 15 years, but because of the way the rates are increasing, they're like, hey, maybe I should take a look at this. I think a lot of the questions come around, they have young drivers, their kids might have just got their license and they're like, okay, really got to start thinking about this. I need to make sure my auto policy is up to par. Maybe how could I get a better rate with young drivers on it? But that's a big thing that we're helping people with. We're in a very litigious society and there's a lot of claims coming out of lawsuits. Over the past like 5 or 10 years, there's been a higher prevalence on nuclear verdicts, right? For like the social inflation, for example. In other words, like, you know, your kid gets in a car accident and the injured third party is hiring an attorney and they can look up online. They could find out what your net worth is and they're going to go after all of it. And you hear it on the news, you hear about the litigation claims that have been going on all around the country. A lot are taking place in Florida. I would say 75% of litigation claims are coming out of Florida these days. Mind you, a state that doesn't have high insurance requirements on auto. So people with a lot of money or not even a lot of money, they could be sued for unearned wages. They could be sued for pain and suffering. So I think that's a big topic that not only clients are thinking about, but financial advisors and attorneys are starting to raise to some of their more wealthy clients.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of your clients have second homes. And what types of systems do you have in place like for these second homes? Because things can break and could cause major issues. And it's not a home that you're at all the time. So are there things that you look for to kind of mitigate damages in your coverage for these secondary homes or places that they might not be at all the time?
Really good question. And quite honestly, Megan, I don't think it's limited to just second homes. Obviously, that raises a big concern since you're not there. But in the industry in general, I think carriers are taking more of a proactive approach to insurance, right? Over the last 10 years, the water loss claims have really increased, right? So that could be someone uses the bathroom, uses a little too much toilet paper, and all of a sudden you have a flood on your second, you're going from your second floor to your first floor. So there's a lot of water damage claims. You're noting a lot of theft claims, things like that. So what these carriers are requiring are what we call water leak detection systems. It's a huge one. And there's different types of systems out there. But basically, the carriers are wanting to make sure that the clients are aware if there's any type of leak going on in their house. So these systems work. There's a main part that gets attached to the main water source in your house. And then there's these little attachments that go to your toilets, your sinks, your washer and dryer. And when there's a lack of pressure, the system will either turn off your water supply completely to mitigate that loss or send you a notification on your phone. Carriers want their insureds to install these devices, so they do offer a very nice credit on your account for things like that. Homes over $750,000, they're going to want to see the central station fire and burglar alarms, and especially in secondary homes, but pretty much all your properties. Yeah, I think they're the two biggest ones that we're talking about now.
And that is such a good feature to have. Like, it's something that I think, like, most, if you can afford it, it's such a good thing to have. I remember, like, years ago, a friend of my mom's, she was at her second home, and her first home had a pipe break on the second floor. And, like, right. her whole, I mean, it was essentially, like, she had to repair her entire home. It was, like, basically the cost of the house. And it was a while ago. So I think these things didn't even exist then,
right.
in the olden days. And what a catastrophic loss, though, too. And yes, she had insurance, but that's also, there's a giant headache involved in that too, that you don't want to have to deal with. So if there's some preventative measure that you could possibly have that could prevent it from happening, why not? You know?
Absolutely. And we actually, one of my account managers had this claim herself. It was probably 13 years ago. So yeah, like, they did not have these type of devices or required it. But like I said, there was a toilet leak in her house from a clogged toilet, and it went to her second floor. She had to get the ceilings replaced, the drywall, the floors, the hardwood floors. And there's one stain on a hardwood floor. They need to replace the whole entire room because it all needs to match, right? Then you have your contents that get ruined in claims like this. And 13 years ago, that claim cost about $40,000. Nowadays, that would have been north of $100,000. And this is a traditional home, but that's how much these claims cost. And just to think, if she had that device sitting next to her bedside, she would have walked to the other room. That's the most painful part. You don't even need to be at your secondary home. These claims happen while you're sleeping, you know?
Yeah, it happened in my house like 2 weeks ago. The toilet was leaking, and like, my husband went in the garage and he's like, it's dripping.
Right.
And it was an easy fix. And we, you know, turned off the water. But at the same time, when you see things dripping, you're like, oh man.
Yeah. You're like, oh no, how deep do I want to go here? But, and I will say though, the carriers, it's almost like a buyback period, right? You spend, it depends on the square footage of your house, but these devices can range from $400, and then you need to hire a plumber to install it. You know, most of our clients, these devices are going to cost them about $1,500 and maybe above, depending on the square feet of their house, and then the plumbing cost.
Yeah.
But you get like a 5% credit. So you think you get it 1 year, and in 5 years, it pays itself off.
Yeah. Other than that, is there any other things or preventative measures that you've come across that you recommend to your clients? This is something worth investing in, or even just certain coverages that they may not be aware of that you've seen throughout your career that are ones that are beneficial?
Sure. So I would say for a homeowner's policy, you know, I think a lot of individuals may think, oh, I'm just going to get my homeowner's policy and everything's going to be good. But there's some coverages that aren't always included in the standard policy. So talking with an agent is super beneficial. There's one coverage it's newer, I'd say within the last 5 to 7 years, but it's service line coverage. And I'm always amazed that this even exists on a homeowner's policy, because insurance is for the unforeseen claims, right? Like unintentional. Service line covers from your house to the end of your property line and all of the pipes and wires and things like that on your property. As the homeowner, you are responsible to fix that yourself. It's not the township. So there's this coverage in place. It's usually like a $20,000 limit, maybe $35 a year. And it's subject to a lower deductible typically than you have. So maybe $500 to $1,000. But it's not if, it's when that's going to happen, especially if you're living. We see those claims happening a lot in the Pennsylvania area with the older infrastructure in our city and things like that. And then I would say the other one, equipment breakdown, that's meant for all your home appliances. We had a client that had a claim with their HVAC system, right? So they had an HVAC system that was probably 10 years old, and they were insured with, it was Cincinnati, and the adjuster came out and took a look, and it's kind of situational, right? Like, they're not going to cover, there's no coverage here if it's just wear and tear and it's a 20-year-old HVAC system. But this one happened to be 10 years old. The adjuster came out and they said, hey, HVAC systems would probably last about 12 to 13 years. So this is still in that not wear and tear time frame. So they got a whole new HVAC system, less than $1,000 deductible. If you're somebody who is in a home that has newer appliances and maybe the warranty's up and things like that, it's a great coverage to have. I've seen it save a lot of clients thousands of dollars.
Yeah. It's funny when you bring up the coverage on the underground lines, because I lived through that. We lived in Philly, lived in like a 100-year-old house,
right.
old pipes, and they crumbled and it was gross.
Oh, I can imagine.
And at that time, I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing that could happen. And then we had to get all these pipes replaced. And it was a giant, giant cost, though, too, that we hadn't anticipated or even expected to be something. You expect certain costs. That was not something at the time was in my head like, oh, yeah, this is going to be something that could go wrong.
Right. And that's the thing with insurance. You're like, oh, that'll never happen. That'll never happen. But fact of the matter is, these are uncontrollable circumstances that pop up, and it's really my job to help my clients have control in those circumstances, right? So yeah, that piece of paper is going to allow you to hopefully get back to your life easily and effectively. One other I think item that goes overlooked, or some people don't even know they can have this on their homeowner's insurance, is identity theft and cyber protection.
Oh, yeah.
These days, you could have young kids and a lawsuit occurs for cyberbullying or something like that. Your identity gets compromised on putting your information on a faulty site. And there's great coverage out there on your homeowners where you have to check this, and I would ask your agent, but are attorney fees included in that? And how can you get your identity back the quickest way? And your kids could be really damaged by what happened online. So those coverages do exist. And I think that goes overlooked a lot.
Yeah. And like as a parent with kids in that age group, that is definitely something I worry about. Like my daughter downloaded some app the other day and I was like, okay, I don't know if I like this app. Tell me if it gets bad.
Right.
Let me know if anyone says anything mean. Like,
and they just, it's a click of a button and you can send out a video and you know, you don't know it's not good until it's not good. Right?
Yeah, it's like, this makes me feel uncomfortable, but okay.
Yeah.
Be smart. Back to the underlines coverage, though, I imagine with like many of your clients, like they have probably larger properties, though, too. So the amount of the square foot area that things could go awry is larger. It's not like me in my little row home in Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
The distance from my front door to the street was not very long. But these projects are probably, they could be much, much more expansive.
Imagine what costly. If you have things on your property too, right? Like a pool where there's things having to be interrupted to repair those corrosion pipes or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Going back to like the client relationships, because that's a huge part of obviously what you do. Maybe this is giving away some of your secret sauce, but I think it's more of a, you're advocating for yourself. How do you go about cultivating the client relationship so they trust you and that they're going to be like, oh yeah, I got to listen to Erica. What's your process in developing that client trust? Because obviously you're dealing with very close to heart things, these people's homes and their valuables and their collections. And so how do you go about that?
You know, it always helps when it's a referral source, right? But I would say from there, you really do have to cultivate the relationship and they need to trust you. A lot of people come to me, they've been working with a broker or maybe not, but a lot of times it's a relationship they've had for many, many years. And why should they come work with me? But I think I just stand true to just being really genuine. I love to get to know people. So my questions I ask, I hope they come off because they really are like genuine. And I think the other thing that's super important is being just honest. Like if you don't know the answer to something, which in insurance, things change all the time. There's a lot of stuff to keep up with. So just be honest. You know, if you don't know the answer, don't give them an answer that you don't know. Get back to them. They appreciate that so much. And I think that goes overlooked a lot. And also being upfront, trying to set expectations up front and letting them know, like, hey, you have a house in Florida. This is going to take a long time. This might take 2 weeks to get final proposals, whereas other ones come in 5 days or 2 days. But just being genuine, being upfront and set expectations and just being respectful of their time and making sure that you're not just answering something to get them off the phone.
Yeah. I imagine for some of these things that you might have to, like, do you have to go to the properties and, like, assess things one-on-one? Some things that could be very obscure, or you might need, do you need to bring, like, appraisers in to assess values in order to be able to prepare or recommend the right kind of coverage?
Absolutely. And that's something I do based on the client's request. A lot of times our clients are super busy. They're not always located in Pennsylvania, but we are always willing to travel. If I have a client in Arizona and they have an inspector coming and they want me there to make sure that everything goes smoothly, then we'll do that. Absolutely. But I always love when I get to visit the client's house. You know, it's, you get to see what they're proud of, and yeah, you know, it helps you be, again, more genuine in your recommendations too. So a lot of times I'll do proposal reviews in person after we've had the conversation. So I always love that. But again, like you mentioned, if there is an inspection happening and they want someone there, I do in-home inspections with the adjuster or whatever who is coming out.
Yeah. And I imagine that goes to the trust level too. And you're cultivating a full arm approach. You know, you're not just there to connect and sell them insurance. Like, you're a partner with your clients from day one, like, until the end. So whenever issues pop up, you want to be the person that they're going to be able to trust and call. And even if there's a claim, like, do you get involved if, or are you kind of an advocate if there's any sort of claim against your clients? Because I know you have Absolutely. A claims team.
We do have a claims team, and I have very, very experienced account managers there too. But it's funny, and I think a lot of my clients are like, wow, is this your cell phone number? But I give my cell phone number out to everybody. And I'm lucky to have a job where I have a lot of flexibility, but I'm also working 24/7 just to be on the call, on call for situations like that. But I think it's just realizing that if they're calling you when there's a bad situation, like, their world just got flipped upside down. They want someone yeah. there to be able to call. So there's been times, there was a huge fire one of our clients had like last year, and it was just over the bridge in Jersey, but we actually went right down to the scene as the fire was happening, when the fire trucks were there and whatnot. But really, if nothing else at that point, as at that point, it's up to the carrier and the claims adjusters what goes on, but we're there to see it from the start and help them throughout the whole process and negotiate with the carriers if the client's not getting the settlement that they yeah. want. Now, on the other side of that, because of the extensive questions we ask, and because we place the policies right the first time around, we see a client that's insured with Chubb, and we're like, okay, we feel good, right? Like, it's like they're going to get what they need. But if not, we're there to have that conversation and cultivate our relationships that we also have on the carrier side sure. to be advocates for our clients.
I think we need to highlight that too. Like, your relationship is on two ends. You also have to work on developing solid relationships with these carriers to know that you know the carriers, you trust, you know the programs, and you're like, oh, I want to recommend this program because I know the program and I know who I'm working with over at that carrier. You feel comfortable with it, but it's a two-way kind of relationship. You have your client relationships, but you have your carrier relationships as well.
Absolutely. And I always love to talk about that because it really is so important to have those good relationships with carriers. And JKJ does a phenomenal job at doing that. You know, there's a lot of times where I have a client. So I always say this, high net worth individuals love to have homes in the most catastrophically prone areas in the state. So that means maybe a house in Pennsylvania, but also a house in Florida and California and Colorado.
Yeah.
So,
on a hill, you know, near an landslide. Yeah.
right on the bay. They have their yachts out there and their deck and everything. And what carriers look for in a good risk is a spread of risk, right? If there's 50% of their properties in a cat prone area, they do want to see some non-cat premium in there too.
Right.
So these days, especially because of the market we're in, carriers are limiting their appetite. They don't want to see people with two water claims in the last 5 years. They don't want to see people with small claims on their auto, right? Which you as the insured come to me and say, yeah, Erica, we have some auto claims, but three of them are for a tow. And that's what insurance, like my insurance comes with roadside assistance. Why is this a bad claim? I didn't hit anyone. They paid out $50, but they want to see a good risk, good claims history and mindset coming from insured. So a big part of my job is telling underwriters the story, helping them realize, like, hey, they didn't have me before when they were filing these claims. And the trust that our carriers have in us is, hey, these guys are with JKJ now. they're there to coach them through the claims process. Is it going to cost $3,000 to fix their Mercedes? Are they going to file that claim, or does it make more sense in this market to just pay out of pocket? So having and cultivating those carrier relationships make those conversations so much easier to have with our clients when there's maybe a little hair on their account, or maybe they just have really nice things in the worst areas to insure. So.
But that is such a good point, though, because it's almost like it's like their insurance credit score. When you're shopping, you want to make sure it looks clean. And I think it's not something people think about all the time.
It's not. And it's something that I really encourage people to think about in this market. I've been in the industry, you know, almost a little less than 4 years, but we've got 10 years at JKJ. They've been in the industry 30 years. My account managers have been in the industry 30 years. And they're like, Erica, we've never seen it. It has not been like this in such a long time. And I think my job is just becoming so much more prevalent and important and noticed by insureds because of how difficult it is to really get placed with good coverage with a good company. So yeah, it's a big part of what we do.
Yeah. And back to like having homes in high risk places, it's also one of those things like, of course they do, because those are probably the most beautiful, wonderful places to have a home. And if you have the money to do it, why wouldn't
don't you want a house on the, you know, on the shore? And yeah, amazing.
But then you look at like this past week in New Jersey with all like the crazy flooding and like the waves at the shoreline, like there was like, and all those homes are
very, very much so. And that's another thing. The climate's really changing. It's not only the shore points now. FEMA actually adjusted their flood schedule and requirement a year ago. You don't really need to be in a flood zone to have insurance, flood insurance. So it's a conversation we're having.
It's funny. Like, my kids are fascinated with flooding. They just are. And we live on a hill, and I'm always like, I could be wrong, but I'm like, I don't think we could ever flood here because everything's just going to flow downhill. And then they try to pick out, okay, then we can't flood. Who will? And they're like, oh, well, that house will flood. I was like, yeah, maybe they'll get our water.
Send them over. We could show them a lot. I love that. Well, that's the most thing I hear that all day. Oh, I've lived in this house 20 years. We've never had any water. I'm good. And then
you do. You just.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And I wanted to actually backtrack to your prior job, because I do flashback. We did talk about this on the podcast that never got recorded, but I think it was a fun anecdote that your father's reaction when you said that you were going to take this job
was your mom. My mother's. That's probably one of my favorite stories. So yeah, graduating college, I was going between two jobs, right? One was like ADP, beautiful base salary, full benefits, lots of perks. They paid for my car, paid for my cell phone, you know, a lot of great things. Tom James is full commission, right? Like, it was full commission, no auto, no big perks like that. And my mom comes from sales. That's why I am who I am today, and like why I love doing what I do. So I confided in her a lot when I was doing my job search, and same with like my uncles and things like that. Tom James was a little skeptical to hire me. They weren't really sold on me on my first interview. And so I had talked to one of my really good mentors and teachers at Bloomsburg, Dr. Fabian. And I was like, Dr. Fabian, I don't know what to do. Like, I got a job offer here. It sounds great, but like, I really want to sell custom clothes. Like, I always wanted to be in the fashion industry. I know it's full commission, but now's the time. If I'm going to get involved in something that is going to be a bigger risk, like, now's the time I want to do it. So she put in a good word. Tom James ended up offering me the job, and they offered to me on the spot. And they're like, got to take it or whatever. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to think about it. They're like, no, like, you kind of need to let us know. I end up accepting the job on the spot. I resigned my acceptance from the other company. I get in the car and I call my mom, and she's like, what? Are you kidding me? Are you serious, Eric? You just took a full commission job? She hangs up the phone. And I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? What did I just do? But honestly, I wouldn't have changed it for the world. It was a time to do it. It led me to where I am today. And she always laughs. I hit some club levels my first year there, and my mom got me a card by the end of year one. She's like, I'm really sorry. Like, aww. I'm glad that you made this decision.
But it's a risk. It was definitely, I understand your mom's hesitation with it being like,
I'm the oldest of three girls. And she's like, oh my God, my daughter's taking a full commission job out of college. She's going to live here forever.
Although she probably wouldn't have minded. Yeah. But it's also the time in your life to take said risk. And there's certain times that you just have to take a leap of faith. And when you're fresh out of college, it's not a bad time to take a leap of faith. And look where it brought you.
Exactly. The people I met there, I still talk to Austin Schwartz, who was my mentor there daily. And just the tangible skills that I learned at that job, I think everyone should take a risk their first career. Like, do something you really want to do and what you are passionate about. You never know where you're going to end up. I say it all the time. I never would have thought I would have been in insurance, but if it wasn't for that job, if I wasn't making 85 cold calls a day, seeing 5 people in person a day, it was a grind that I honestly never want to have to do again, but I now know what I have to do not to have to make, 85 cold calls a day. It's getting the referrals. It's asking for the referrals. It's putting yourself in uncomfortable situations and getting comfortable with them. Kind of goes back to the first question you asked, right? Like, how did you overcome working with this level of caliber of individuals and wealth and get comfortable with uncomfortable?
Yeah, it's so true, because it's like, what is the saying? Like, no growth happens. I don't know. There's some saying about it.
I'm picking up on your foot now. No, absolutely.
I don't know.
You can't grow.
It's like when you're working out, right? When you're working out, when you're sore the next day, you know that you pushed yourself where you're supposed to be. So you have to go through some of that uncomfortable pain in order to improve and to get to the next level.
To learn to improve. Yeah, just makes you better.
And I'm sure your mom now is like eating her words, though, too.
It's super cool now. My mom, actually, she runs a BCA, Business Clubs of America. She does a lot of their relationship management with their clients. And basically it's, oh my gosh, I don't want to say this wrong, because they build relationships. That's what the group does. In my network, I do a lot of networking. A lot of her clients are my clients or centers of influence. So our paths cross now more than I ever could have imagined. Like, I get to work with my mom a lot. So it's really cool.
That's awesome. That is so cool. Yeah. Well, we are just about out of time, and you kind of already answered this, but I'm going to change it a little bit. If you could do anything to change your career path or do anything differently than you did, what would it be?
That's a good question. You know, I got to say, I am very happy and satisfied of where I'm at now and the potential that my career holds at this point in my life. I think the biggest thing I would change is just not getting so stressed out all the time, realizing like things happen for a reason and the bad things aren't always as bad as they seem. And I used to get so anxious, I guess is the word, when having to deliver bad news. Oh my gosh, one time I put the wrong pockets on like 5 jackets for this guy. And I'm like, oh my God, he spent all this money. I have to go tell him that nothing came out right. He waited 6 weeks for this. He was like, oh, no problem, Erica. Sounds good. It's always worse in your head when you play back the conversation than it actually is. So that's what I would say.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. I still am always a stressed out mess, but I remember like my younger self being like a crazy person stress. Now I still am stressed, but it's different.
Yes, you're a little more comfortable with it. Right. Yes. Better ways to cope. Go to the gym. That's what I would tell myself too. Go run it off. It solves a lot of problems.
It does. It really, really does. Or just like a walk out, walk in the woods. It can do wonders. Well, Erica, thank you so much for joining me again.
Oh my gosh. Anytime, Megan. Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I cannot wait to listen to the podcast and see where it takes you, because it's going to be awesome.
Thank you. And just for our listeners out there, why don't you let them know if they are shopping for insurance, I want them to get in touch with you. So let them know how they can find you. And even the carriers out there who listen, like, so you can develop more carrier relationships. That's always a good thing for you as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But just say again, my name is Erica Hooven. I am on LinkedIn, but my email address is ehooven, that's H-O-O-V as in Victor, E-N, at jkj.com. Like I said, if you go on my LinkedIn, all my contact information's there, but I always love to meet new people and see where I can help.
Well, awesome. Yeah. I highly encourage you to get in touch with Erica. And of course, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Claims Never Sleep. If you like what you hear, please, please, please like and subscribe to the podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or any of the other streaming podcast services. We are new, so subscription and liking is important to get our reach wider. So thank you and see you next time.
This is the Claims Never Sleep podcast, presented by Cruiser Mitchell, with your host, Megan Henry.